The Institute for Divorce Financial Analysts, IDFA, is a proud sponsor of Purse Strings. IDFA is the premier organization dedicated to the certification, education, and promotion of the use of financial professionals in the divorce arena. IDFA provides specialized training to accounting, financial, and legal professionals in the field of pre-divorce financial planning. To find out more about earning the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst designation, visit institutedfa.com.
Okay, so coming up on today's edition of Women and Money, the shit we don't talk about, our guest is Sarah Hellenbrand.
Sarah is founder of Studio Elevate Fit here in Libertyville, Illinois.
Yes, and I met Sarah at a networking event where she told her story of opening her own business. I loved how real her story was, and I knew that once I heard it, I wanted to share her story with our listeners.
We know over 1,800 women open new businesses every day in America. And being an entrepreneur, we know it's not as easy as it looks.
So true. But we also know that when you have a passion and a drive for the work you're doing, almost nothing can stop you.
We can't wait to dive in and learn all about Sarah and her entrepreneurial journey. So let's get started.
Gloria Steinem once said, "We will never solve the feminization of power until we solve the masculinity of wealth." Barbara Provost and Maggie Nielsen are the team at Purse Strings that will help you navigate the ins and outs of financial independence so that you can be financially fearless. This is Women and Money, the shit we don't talk about.
Hey, Sarah, we are so glad you are with us today. Thank you for being here. Before we dive into this interesting topic, can you share a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Sarah Hellenbrand. I live in the northern Chicago suburbs, and I'm a proud owner of a fitness studio. I am a mom to Eleanor. She's 8 years old, and for better or worse, the reincarnation of myself. So she is a constant informant. My husband and I love cooking. As a family, we love being outdoors, which begs the question of why we live in the Midwest. but anytime that we can, we're outside hiking or walking or trying to find some animals to look at. So we are explorers by nature. Fitness is a passion of mine and always has been. I was an athlete for most of my life. I was a competitive swimmer through college. After that, I decided I would try running. It wasn't so much for me. And then I found the group fitness world. And that was very much where my heart kind of got lit up through movement. So that is something that is still very much a huge part of my life and obviously the driving force behind the studio.
Awesome. So, you know, Sarah, when I heard you tell the story of opening your business, it was really revealing about who you are and what your internal struggles were, and then what brought you joy and kind of really your search for what it is you wanted to do. And so I thought, that's just so interesting because so many of us are on that same journey of really finding, you know, what it is that our passion is and what brings us joy and how we want to spend our time, our days, our lives. So I would love for you to just talk a bit about what led you to open your own business, your own fitness studio.
Yeah, it is a 10-year journey at least. I think it goes really back to when I graduated college and my first job out of school was in the pharmaceutical corporate world. I had a job that I was probably really underqualified for and got very quickly overwhelmed with. So working in the corporate world was a shock to the system after being in college. But I also realized very quickly it wasn't a fit. So I struggled, like really struggled with that job for about just under 2 years. And when I say struggled, like I had crippling anxiety, depression hit really hard. I couldn't separate myself from the stresses that I felt working in that world. And it just, I got to the point where I was literally too depressed to keep working. And so I just had to quit. I didn't have a backup plan. My husband and I had just gotten married. So I was 23, didn't have a job, just gotten married and didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I kind of struggled in that place for several months. And then I started just applying for and working jobs that I did not care about. And I followed this pattern. I apply for and work jobs and offices, no passion behind it. The same things kept coming up for me. Like, I'd get anxious. I wouldn't be able to separate myself from that anxiety. It would lead to depression. I wouldn't be able to continue doing it. And the cycle continued. And at that time, I also wasn't really dialed into what I needed to be doing to take care of my mental health. It was just kind of head down, keep going until, you know, though there's light at the end of the tunnel, or until I try something different. And then what was kind of a blessing was I got pregnant and the job I was working didn't love. And I say it was a surprising blessing. I had my daughter. Of course, that was a blessing. But then I got hit with, no surprise, some postpartum depression that made it impossible for me to leave her. So the plan was for me to return to work, go back to the office job that I didn't care about after having her. And I just couldn't literally leave her for a year. So in that, I at least was fortunate to have a partner who was able to, it was tight for a while, but was able to support us through this. But I stayed home with her. And she also, just by happenstance, was the type of baby that would not let me put her down. Happy as can be if she was on my body, but could not lay this child down. So I got really good at doing everything one-handed or having her on my body while I was doing it. And I happened to be going to a Mommy and Me weekly meeting. It was like my lifeline to the outdoor world. I looked forward to it so much to just have adult conversation. Because at that time, it was just really me and my baby at home. And then that once a week, I'd either go to the grocery store or I'd go to this meeting. So all that to say is that like 6 months and my daughter or some of the moms were saying like, I literally don't even know how to work out right now. I don't even know how to start getting back into shape other than walking with the stroller because these babies, like, they just need us all the time. And I said, you guys, I've got this. I've got this figured out because I can't set her down ever. And I wanted to start moving. So I've got like, I can lead you through a whole workout. Let's start meeting in parks and I'll show you how to do this. So it started small, but we had like a weekly group of moms that would meet me in a park at like 10:30 in the middle of a Wednesday. I'd lead them through a 45-minute workout using the babies. We'd hold them while we squatted. We'd plank over them. Like, they were very much a staple in the workout. So it kept the babies engaged so that we could move and feel better. Eventually the baby started crawling away and walking. So it wasn't a real sustainable program, but it gave me the confidence to know that, okay, so this passion that I've had for a while is something that I can see myself doing professionally. Two, there's an interest in it. And three, people are like showing up for it. So it started small, but I think by the end of it, we were having like 20 women that I didn't even know just show up in a park.
That's incredible. Yeah. I think, you know what what's so cool about that is you just followed what drove you towards what was making you happy and what worked for you. And it worked for so many other people too. They were in the exact same situation you were. That was so cool.
Yeah, it was, it felt very natural. It wasn't forced, which was maybe the first time in my life I've ever experienced like a natural drive. And prior to all of this, I just thought that I was lazy. I thought I was a bad worker. I thought I was somebody who was weak and couldn't handle having a job. I just didn't have the right job. I just wasn't working anything that mattered to me. And so I couldn't get behind it. And so finally, in the first time in my life, I'm like, oh, I actually am good at something. I actually do have the ability to work on something. So I launched my first attempt at a business then. I started renting out space through the park district. I charged people $5 a class, which, you know, it's so funny. I think it's worth noting that we do not give ourselves enough credit for what our value is. That's just a side note. Anyway, and I did that for a while. And then I realized, like, at the time, I just needed more experience to do what I wanted to do really well. So I started working at small boutique studios and big box gyms and small independent businesses and franchises. And throughout the course of 5 years, I learned a lot about what it took to run a really dynamic and exciting fitness experience, but also what it looks like behind the scenes to create schedules and understand what our clients are looking for. And in that, I also had the opportunity to get a lot of trainings and certifications that just kind of bolstered up what my knowledge was and understanding of how to deliver a quality product to a client. What was a blessing in disguise, again, happened during the pandemic. As we know, it changed the world and it really changed the fitness industry. So overnight, we had to go from teaching in a room with 20 or 30 people to staring at a computer screen like this, but having to still perform and having to still deliver the same type of content. It was a new skill. It was uncomfortable at first. And then over time, it got something that I was really good at. I worked for a franchise at the time, and the franchise kind of bound together for these live stream workout classes. So it was more than just the people at the studio I was working watching. At times we had 500 or up to 1,000 people watching me live. So that was,
That's kind of cool.
It was cool. It was very intimidating though, because while I was streaming, I could see how many people were watching live. And it was a skill to just ignore the number, stare at the green light and keep going.
Gotta put a little post-it note over that area.
Right. So, but along the way, I felt like I was just always picking up things. It's common in the fitness world for a professional to work multiple locations at a time. So it was great because each place I worked certified me in their own approach. I got to learn the inner workings behind the scenes. So it was a great time period where I just was a sponge. And then the pandemic happened. The number of places that I was working at reduced just to this one franchise. And at the end of the pandemic, that owner decided she was no longer interested in running the business. And in that time, my confidence just kind of kept increasing. And it gave me at least enough to, when she told me she was closing, I'm like, okay, I'm going to write a business plan. Like, let's just even see if this is feasible. Like, well, I'll write it all out. I'll put together a spreadsheet. Like, let's even see if this is a thing. And I put it together. And that was, again, like one of the first times where I surprised myself with my focus. My daughter was gone at school for like 6 hours or however long the school day is, 6.5 hours that day. And I was at my computer for the whole 6.5 hours that day, just furiously typing, doing numbers. It was something that I had never done because I had never had the drive to do it. And so it really surprised me that I had the capability to even get that figured out.
So what resources did you use to approach that task? Did you just make it up or did you look online or how did you know what to do? Was it just from working in these different industries?
No, I learned a lot about fitness working in the industries, but I knew nothing about how to launch a business from the get-go. So 90%, I think, of what I've learned, I've just had to look up online or watch a YouTube video, or maybe I learned something from a podcast, but this isn't new information, I'm sure, for anyone who is an entrepreneur, but it is an ongoing continuing education program.
Got it.
You're never done learning. You always feel like you're new to something or you're trying to figure out something. The master of none, but trade of all, right? It's very much that situation for me. So yeah, I figured out how to write a business plan. I figured out what I even needed to include in it or consider in it. I did my own research and it gave me enough confidence to like, okay, this is a thing. Like, this is something that I think I can actually do. Coinciding with all of this, I continue to ride my own mental health journey. It got better for a couple of years after I pulled out of my postpartum depression, but then I became self-aware that I had an eating disorder, which is fascinating because I had it probably my whole life since I was 16. But the self-awareness didn't really come until probably 2019, 2018.
Can I ask you what prompted that awareness?
Funnily enough, I was sitting in like a personal development conference waiting for Rachel Hollis to get on stage. At the time, I just read Girl Wash Your Face and Girl Stop Apologizing. And those were good, like kick in the pants books for me to like continue doing new and hard things, right? So I was sitting in the conference waiting for her to speak. They had somebody else on stage whose name I can't even remember, but he asked a rhetorical question. And I'm not really sure what his point that he was getting to, but the question he asked was, what is something you know about yourself that you haven't admitted out loud to anyone? And that was the first thought that popped into my head. Wow. And once it popped into my head, I was like, oh yeah, you're not just living a healthy lifestyle. Like there is something wrong with how you eat and control your food, how you think about movement. Like this is not healthy. So once I became self-aware, it took me a really long time to start getting help for it. Probably a year and a half until I started making steps to make any changes, but it complicated what I did. But in some ways it made me really good at what I did because the things that I still can't quite say to myself, I'm really good at saying to other people.
It's always easier to say to somebody else.
So much easier, but I would feel, you know, all these deep, heavy emotions. And then I would go teach a class. And during that class, I could so deliver the message of self-love and acceptance and healing through movement. And I so was able to make it not about the body for everyone else, but still have to work on that myself. So it was an interesting And it continues to be an interesting dynamic in what I do professionally. You know, the first therapist I saw, but she's like, so maybe you just need to change jobs. And I'm like, oh no, I don't think you understand. Like, this is my calling. This is what I do. It's not an option to just change jobs. Like, yes, that would be very easy if I removed myself from the fitness industry. But then I also thought, like, what if we just changed the fitness industry? What mm-hmm. if movement was really just about moving and about your mind? Because that's ultimately like the biggest thing that I feel when I work out. I don't work out and think, oh yes, it shrunk my body in that one workout. No, what you notice is you work out and you feel a little less pissed off about that email, or you feel a little less, you know, overwhelmed with your to-do list. Like, there's, we know this, the science is there. Like, I don't need to tell anybody this, but what if we just took the focus off the body and we put it on the things that actually matter? So that was really the driving force behind me wanting to create my own space. For a while, I did consider a franchise, but knew that it wouldn't give me any creative freedom or the ability to, like, this be my mission, this be like my driving force. Mm-hmm. So we are proud in our studio to be body friendly. We believe in a principle called HAZE, which stands for health at every size. And the idea behind that is body size is not an indicator of health. And I think we have heard that messaging, and we have a culture that loves telling women they should be smaller and younger and fitter and tinier. And here's this way in one way of eating. And it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle. But if you do it, then you'll look like this. And whether the messaging is overt or not, it's always there. Mm-hmm. And then it gets tied up with movement. I can't pick up my phone without something shouting at me that I'm doing something wrong. And if I just did this one thing, which usually requires pain for a thing, then I would have a more desirable body. So I wanted to give women a space where that just didn't exist. I'm not going to talk, and none of my instructors, I have 9 women that work for me, they're not going to tell you anything about your body. We don't use language like get your summer body ready, which I hate is still a thing, but it's still a thing out there. We don't talk about like toning muscles, shrinking muscles. It's really about the mind and the heart and checking in with where you are and then observing how the movement can help even just your mood change from the beginning to the end of class. And if we can do that in baby steps, one class at a time, maybe over time, it can help heal someone's relationship with movement or change the way they use movement to just improve their overall life.
Wow. That messaging you have is so important because it's a never-ending carrot people are chasing. That's just never going to happen. I'm sorry. If it happens for you, it's not sustainable. And it's just given us such negative messaging to ourselves and our bodies and who we are at every point in turn. And it's an unachievable goal. And we really, you're right, we need to just practice self-love, acceptance, and be grateful for our health and our bodies. Maggie, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I just think this message is amazing because we always get told that we're never enough no matter what we do. So I'm so, you know, happy that there is this almost like safe place to go and just help your mind get better. And it's just amazing. But I also wanted to highlight that you're also employing 9 women right now, which is no small feat. And from someone who thought they couldn't even like hold down a job, much less like found their passion, and now employing 9 women, like that's astounding. I mean, that's something that you should be really proud of. And I want to make sure that gets highlighted because that was a, you know, a little quiet there. And I want to make sure that gets amplified because that's pretty amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. It's I'm lucky to have the team that I have. I'm also lucky to have the buy-in from the team that I have, because again, like anybody who's worked in the fitness industry over the past decade doesn't necessarily share the ideology that I do. So whether people buy in 100% as much as me, I don't know, but when they're here, they deliver the right messaging. And, you know, what makes me know that we've done a good job is every other place that I've ever worked on a Monday morning, women come in, they sit down, they start talking about how bad they were over the weekend, what they ate and drank, how they need to detox, how bad they're feeling about themselves. And intentionally or not, that doesn't happen here. People don't walk in, they're not talking about food, they're not talking about any shame associated with behavior of living life and enjoying their weekends or whatever that might be. And I can't quite put my finger on how that happened, but it's a thing here. And I've never been in any other fitness facility where that hasn't been a topic, a part of the culture to talk about that balance between food and shame and movement. So that is a really powerful thing. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. I mean, it's the culture that you've set up for yourself as the leader, as the owner, as the founder, and what it is, the messages that you're sending throughout your company and through the people that you employ. But yeah, we kind of made a leap from writing a business plan to all of a sudden hiring 9 women. So I know you had some bumps along the way and some things you really needed to learn, as we all do as entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So can you share a little bit about some of those places where you thought, I don't know if I can do this, and how you persevered?
Yeah. The year or the 6 months before it, so it took me 6 months from the time that I was like, yes, I'm in. It was about mid to late June I had an opening date of January 15. So we'll call it just over 6 months from let's get the ball rolling to doors are opening. Everything felt really easy, not easy. Everything felt very manageable when I wrote it down on the business plan. The execution of that was very different. So the biggest or the first big obstacle I had was with my village. My village loves retail and restaurant, not so much fitness facilities in the desirable locations. So I'm in a pretty high traffic strip mall type location, but we have some decent businesses here. There's restaurants in here, there's doctor's offices, there's salons, et cetera. There's a lot of foot traffic and a lot of driving traffic that comes through here. It was not zoned for a fitness facility. So I had to go through what they called a special permit application process, which started with a phone call with somebody who worked for the village. It was an hour long, and he walked me through the 1,000 steps that I was going to have to go through to complete this application process and the $10,000 bond I had to put down to even start. $10,000, which for a business like a grocery store coming in is maybe small change. But for me, that was like, oh my God. So I got off that phone call thinking, nope, I can't do this. This is going to take me months. It's 1,000 forms. It's jumping through all of these hoops, showing up at several different committee meetings and the village board, and it's $10,000. So I had a couple of days where I'm like, well, this dream's dead. This is never going to happen. But then I just wasn't ready to be done. And so I think once I got over the hump of putting down that $10,000, I knew I had to be all in, right? Like if you're going to put that down, it's like, okay, time to giddy up. We're going to do this. But that process was really challenging. I had to do things like hire an aerial photographer to prove that the parking lot could accommodate 20 or 30 women showing up all at the same time at 6 a.m., at 9:30 a.m., at 5 p.m., and on the weekends. So I had somebody flying a drone over the parking lot, you know, several times throughout the course of the week. I had to mail out certified letters with read receipts to anybody who lived 150 yards from this property. And we happen to have a bunch of condos right over here. So I spent the most money I have ever spent at the post office sending out these letters just to notify them that there was going to be a hearing on this property. Most of them got returned to me. They cost like $8 or $9 each. It was a really painful thing.
Oh my gosh. So did you have any idea? I had no idea you had to do that.
Yeah. So then I had to appear in front of several village committees and then finally the village board. And with each step, it became a little less overwhelming. And it felt like it was something, looking back now, just saying these things like, okay, they're annoying things, but I know now that I can handle them. Before that, I was like, oh, no way. Like, I can't do this. So every step made it a little more manageable, a lot more easy to digest. And then simultaneously, I was working on negotiating the lease for my property. I knew I didn't have to rush it because I had to wait for the permit process to get in. That it took 3 months from start to finish for this application process to go through. But so I was negotiating the lease with the help of a lawyer. But ultimately, it was a 60-page legal document. I read it the first time, understood nothing, completely overwhelmed. But day after day, I would go back in, I'd tackle one page at a time. Anyway, so conquering the lease was another big confidence boost because it was basically like I learned a foreign language I didn't think I was going to be able to understand or process. And then I felt like I really grabbed the bull by the horns by the end and felt not only like I understood it, but I was in control of the deal that I got from the leasing company. So between the special permit application process and tackling the lease, those were the hardest things. Those were things I had never done before. They felt big and overwhelming at the beginning. And then little by little, I was able to break them down to something that was a lot more achievable. The creative stuff was much easier for me. It was easy for me to create format guides and train my staff and teach them, you know, my vision and how I wanted the movement to feel and look like. Everything about the business side of it has been a learn as you go. Oh my gosh, is this going to work? No. Okay. Let's pivot. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Type of experience.
I can't believe that you had to go through all those different steps. I mean, just creating a business plan and, you know, you lay out what you think is going to have to happen. You're like, you know, you have to get a lease, you know, you'll have to like file as a business, but like some of these things, getting cameras in the parking lot at all times a day. I mean, I could not imagine. I'd just be like, what is going on here?
It was a bit of a process. And in the same light, our village is really good at protecting and supporting their small businesses. So it was hard to get a foot in the door, but once I got a foot, I mean, that was one of the reasons why I chose this as the location. We fearlessly in Libertyville like to support and prioritize our small businesses, which is really evident. We have a really vibrant Main Street downtown area. And the businesses in this complex, there's always traffic, which is not true for a lot of strip mall type designs. So it, yes, so hard. I would offer myself up as like a coach or cheerleader for anyone else who has to go through it because it was so overwhelming. But so grateful to have gotten through it and to be able to open my doors here because the community is really what makes the business successful, right? And so the fact that they're here, the village is behind promoting us as well is really helpful.
Awesome. So what about you open your doors, you design your studio. How did that go, the design part and getting the studio ready?
Loved it. It was so fun because it's what everyone wants to do, right? I had a Pinterest board, like you saved all your ideas and I actually got to do it. So that part was really fun for me. I worked with a contractor. I showed him, you know, my very specific ideas and said, I just really want you to recreate this. I'm also lucky. My father-in-law is a custom furniture maker by design. So he helped build some of these really beautiful pieces in the studio that are unique and give it a different aesthetic that what you might associate with a fitness facility. So the appearance of the room was important to me because I wanted it to literally feel like an oasis and a sanctuary, almost like a spa type of experience when you enter the space. So during class, we have all of the blinds drawn on the windows. The lighting is soft. There's accent lighting. I have candles and essential oil diffusers going. I really want it in every way that I could to make a shift from what it's like outside that door to when you immediately walk in. It's like an exhale. It's a different space. So the design part was fun for me and it still is fun to continue to enhance it to this day.
Can I ask you how you got funding to start your business?
Yeah, so we didn't need much. I mean, the bond that I had to put down for the special permit application process was refunded to me almost completely at the end. So we just had to be out that money for a certain amount of time. We also had a home equity line of credit that we had paid off from a previous renovation that was still open. And we were able to draw on that from what we needed for just the renovation cost here, which most of it was covered in the negotiations that I did with my landlord. So we had to pay very little to the cost of the build out and the design in here. And then just getting the equipment that I needed here. We're lucky being a service-driven industry that the bulk of my expenses is my payroll, right? So I don't need to be getting people or paying for, you know, new inventory or anything like that. So once I got the equipment and once I built the space, the rest was really just time.
Wow, that sounds great. And so
I have a question for you. How do you manage your finances, your accounting, your payroll, all of that, which is when we start new businesses, that's not our area of expertise. Your area of expertise is fitness. So do you reach out to other professionals to help you with that? Do you have a team, a financial team? How do you manage that?
Yeah, it's all outsourced. And I'm, honestly a little embarrassed to say that given the podcast that I'm on right now, it's never been an area of strength for me. And at the beginning of the business, it wasn't something that I also wanted to tackle in addition to getting this off the ground. It's fascinating that you asked that because that is now like a new current focus of mine is getting my hands on it personally instead of having somebody else do the work for me. I understand it. It gets explained to me. The execution of it would be nice if someday I could just do that myself.
Hey, you know what? You shouldn't be doing that yourself. That you give that to the experts who know how to do it. Why take on that role? And, you know, I often say entrepreneurs open a business because they have a passion. It's something that they love to do. And it typically doesn't revolve around payroll and managing their books and things like that, unless you are a financial provider or bookkeeper or something like that. For the most part, you know, they're doctors, they're dentists, they're, you know, they're Studio Elevate owners, you know, things like that. So it's not really, what's most important is knowing where your strengths are and where your weaknesses are and having the right, what we say is financial team at your fingertips who you can trust and work together with and learn from and partner with so that they can help your business succeed.
Yeah. And yes to all of that. There's a part of the control piece of me that, you know, it's just a personality flaw that would like to control it all and do it all. I don't think that's realistic either, but just I know where all the money is. I can tell you where it's going. Doing it myself, I still think someday it'll be on me, but
all the power to you. I mean, if you want to do it, if you want to learn, all the power to you right there.
Yeah. Thank you.
And so what advice or tips would you give to other women who are considering opening up their own business?
Great question. I think the two things that I have learned or the skills that I've built learning along the way are twofold. One is what I have learned is I'm never going to know exactly what I'm doing. I will have a vision. I'll want to execute it. But again, I haven't done the thing. So I have to learn how to do the thing. So being okay, not being the expert right away, and just knowing that with diligence and perseverance, you can become maybe not the expert, but really knowledgeable enough to do what you need to do. The second skill is resiliency, because it is, and I think I knew it would be like this, but I didn't understand how it would feel. You can't take your foot off the gas pedal. You take the foot off the gas pedal, the business stops, or it stops growing, or it moves backwards. And I knew that that would be the case, but living that day to day, it means I don't really have days off, and that's okay. I don't always work full days either. But it's like, so we have one child, and a lot of people have asked us, like, well, they've stopped over the years, thankfully, but for a long time, they were asking us when the second child was coming, and I never had a good answer. But now, like, the studio is my second child. I worry about it constantly. I'm thinking about it constantly. I worry about its wellness and its health and what it needs and how to nurture it. It is my second child. So perhaps I was surprised with the intensity of what that's like. I also have a business that, you know, so much of me is the execution of the studio. So it is a personal thing, for better or for worse. I think it allows us to give a really great experience here, but it also means that I carry it very closely to me almost always. So I think for somebody who is looking to start a business, knowing that whatever end of the spectrum you're on is that it's always going to be with you. And that's okay, because if it's something you love, that maybe that's a good sign. It's going to be okay if it's something you love, and that you might never feel like you know what you're doing. And that's okay too, because if you've gotten to the point where you've opened doors, you know you're going to figure it out. So those are my two big personal growth things from opening the business.
I always love talking to other entrepreneurs, because it's like, yeah, I have no idea what I'm going to do, but we're going to keep going forward, you know, and everyone's just a little lost, but it's all okay. We'll all get there someday.
Yeah. Yeah. I had somebody ask me recently, like, well, what's the biggest mistake you've made when opening the studio? And I froze, not because I hadn't made mistakes, but because there's never been like a moment where you can pause on the mistake. Like, the mistakes happen and you just have to keep figuring it out. So I think that was an interesting reflection, because I froze. I think the person thought, like, oh, she's trying to think of a mistake she's made. I'm like, oh, no, there's been thousands of those probably. But I've never had like the luxury of sitting and just like reflecting on the mistake, because you have to get it figured out. You have to keep moving it forward. So, yeah.
Well, and I think that's a sign of a good entrepreneur, right? Stop, assess, pivot, move on. Stop, assess, pivot, move on. I mean, it's never, you can't just stop. You just have to think, be a good decision maker and determine what are my best next steps. And let's try this, right? Who knows? It's like life. Who knows? You know, you get up every day and you do the best that you can do. But, you know, it's, I think with entrepreneurship, it's around really a drive and a passion. We don't necessarily do it for the money. We hope we can pay our bills and pay ourselves and all of that. But it's really about a driving force. Like you said, you thought you weren't maybe a good worker, but the real, you are a hard worker, girl. Everything well, that you've done.
It surprises me. I work every day now. I'm up at 5:30 in the morning on my computer, and I don't work full days because there's a break in my day where I get my daughter. But then my computer's out again at night. It surprises me that I'm able to do that still. Like it's still, and I think that also goes into the stories we tell ourselves and the people who we think we are until we break ourselves out of that shell. I think there's something to that, and probably a lot of therapy appointments behind it too. But man, it was the best thing I ever did for my personal development was opening this studio. I learned the most about myself. It was the hardest thing I've ever done for sure. But the best thing I've ever done for myself, for my mental health and just me as a person.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. This has been a great conversation today, Sarah. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on that you want to make sure is shared today with our listeners?
I don't think so. You've been great question askers.
All right. Awesome. Well, if anyone is in the Northwest Chicagoland area and wants to go to get a little workout in, get your body moving, you can always go to Studio Elevate Fit in Libertyville, Illinois. And please like and subscribe in our podcast as it always helps us grow. Thank you, Sarah, for coming on today and sharing your expertise. And we'll talk to everyone soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.
Information is for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute tax, investment, or legal advice. Always consult with a qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before taking any action.
The Institute for Divorce Financial Analysts, IDFA, is a proud sponsor of Purse Strings. IDFA is the premier organization dedicated to the certification, education, and promotion of the use of financial professionals in the divorce arena. IDFA provides specialized training to accounting, financial, and legal professionals in the field of pre-divorce financial planning. To find out more about earning the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst designation, visit institutedfa.com.